Remote Therapy: Should You or Not? By Alex Spann, MD. Uncertain times, uncertain minds. Since the beginning of the global coronavirus pandemic, mental health needs have skyrocketed, so providers have turned to remote therapy. Almost half of Americans surveyed reported that the pandemic was affecting their mental well-being. 1 in 5 said the effect was severe. In April 2020, calls to a national crisis hotline run by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration (SMHS) increased tenfold over past years. Even if you manage to escape infection by the virus, there are mental health effects of living through a pandemic. Prescriptions for anxiety, sleep, and depression medications rose, and increased alcohol and marijuana sales suggest people might be self-medicating more. Threats of disease and death, high unemployment, a divided political climate, and social unrest have made 2020 a year of unparalleled mental anguish in America. Mental health experts had hoped the initial spike would be temporary. Instead, several months into the pandemic, a major survey by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention (CDC) showed the situation only getting worse. More than 1 in 10 Americans seriously considered suicide in June 2020, double the rate compared to past years. The outlook was even bleaker for America's youth. 1 in 4 people aged 18 to 25 having reported contemplating taking their own lives. That's about 8 million young people who consider death as an escape. Other at-risk populations are also hurting badly. Hispanics, blacks, and essential workers have struggled with suicidal thoughts about 19%, 15%, and 22%, respectively. It seems this pandemic just won't let up, and it can have devastating effects on the most vulnerable among us. Therapist, can you hear me now? As a result, the demand for mental health services is soaring. Combined with the need for social distancing, this has accelerated the rise of internet-based remote therapy in place of traditional, in-person treatment. This sudden shift to the digital world raises many questions. Is anything in the therapist-client relationship lost when a computer screen replaces the consultation room? Can something as human and intimate as psychotherapy be effective when performed via two-dimensional, grainy, digital transmission? Let's explore the pros and cons of virtual therapy. Until now, most professionals and their clients have been slow to adopt virtual mental health services. Before the pandemic, with few exceptions, people preferred in-person therapy. But virtual treatment can offer certain benefits over in-person treatment. In some situations, even before the need for social distancing, remote treatment has helped people overcome barriers that would otherwise have prevented them from accessing treatment. The very problem someone is trying to get help with can itself make it harder to get that support. The long way home. Small towns and rural areas create one of the most common barriers to accessing care since they often have few mental health professionals. Small towns generally don't have enough demand to support a therapist. So just a handful will be spread out over entire counties, forcing people to drive long distances for sessions. Rural areas usually lack public transit, making these treks even more difficult if people don't have easy access to a car. The shortage of providers in these areas can also make it hard for people to find a therapist who speaks their preferred language or specializes in the type of treatment they need. What's more, the social stigma around therapy can have a more substantial effect. Homes where the safety is. It is perhaps a cruel irony that the very problem someone is trying to get help for can itself make it harder to get that support. For example, people who struggle with severe depression may find it challenging to get out of bed and get dressed, let alone drive an hour for therapy. Symptoms may paralyze those with panic, anxiety, or agoraphobia so that they cannot leave their homes. A person recovering from a substance use disorder may have a suspended driver's license and be unable to get to a provider's office. Even if you can get out of the house, for some, just driving on busy roads or sitting in a waiting room can be filled with emotional strife. Then there is the privacy issue. Most consider psychotherapy to be a private endeavor, and news travels fast in small communities. Remote therapy makes it possible to have your sessions in the privacy of your home, no travel necessary. The costs of travel include gas, parking, tolls, or tickets for public transit. Even worse, since none of these costs are on a sliding scale based on income, access to therapy gets more expensive the poorer you are. We're in this together virtually. Kim Kelsey, LCSW, psychotherapist in York, Maine, believes that remote therapy for couples and families permits the parties to be brought together virtually while also feeling safe. One of the advantages is people want to be in their own space when they use telehealth, says Kelsey. In these cases, she believes that video calls provide therapy options where there was none before. It's about time. Remote therapy can also be more economical. The costs of travel include gas, parking, tolls, or tickets for public transit. Even worse, since none of these costs are on a sliding scale based on income, access to therapy gets relatively more expensive the poorer you are. When you are living paycheck to paycheck, every dollar counts. Remote therapy saves time, too. The time that would have been spent traveling to and from a therapist's office can be freed up for work, family, or other activities. Cost saving. Working remotely can lower costs for therapists as well. A therapist who sees all of their clients remotely does not need to rent office space, cutting out one of their most significant overhead expenses. Late cancellations and no-shows can mean lost time and income for therapists. But, according to Kelsey, remote therapy offers a workaround. For instance, if the weather is bad or a client has to be home with their children, they very likely can still attend a session using telehealth. Constance Hanley, clinical psychologist, agrees, remarking that with telehealth, the no-show rate is near zero. We are running a giant experiment. Although some studies and companies marketing these remote services tell a rosy story, there are few more stories to tell. Remote therapy is convenient and flexible. It lets people work outside normal business hours. If you're ready to talk early in the morning or later in the evening, teletherapy allows that. By embracing people's natural circadian rhythms, remote sessions can potentially lead to more effective therapy. So, it's all good, right? Not so fast. According to the American Telemedicine Association, telemental health is equally as effective as in-person therapy for many populations. People with dementia, depression, PTSD, ADHD, substance use, and anxiety all benefit. This holds across a wide range of age groups, from young children to older adults. Many children and young adults prefer remote to in-person therapy. General interpersonal therapy, relapse prevention therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy all test well in the virtual environment. So, remote therapy appears to be a panacea, a golden gift that has been right in front of us for years. We just never embraced it. But is it? Remote therapy has its privacy concerns. As we all know, the internet can be a jungle. While telehealth platforms should have additional safety mechanisms and encryption, no technology is perfect, and hackers are always finding ways to break through. Computer viruses, malware, spyware, ransomware, and other such threats have become part of our digital lives. There is no reason to believe that telehealth systems are not potentially as vulnerable to an unforeseen breach as anything else. Before the pandemic, the total number of Americans using telehealth for all types of care, including mental health, was only about 1 million. Now that the pandemic has forced our hand, that number has exploded, and we are running a giant experiment. Although some studies and companies marketing these remote services tell a rosy story, there are few more stories to tell. The field of telemedicine was still in its infancy when the pandemic hit, and the body of evidence supporting its effectiveness isn't very large. Furthermore, many of the studies are flawed, calling their validity into question. For instance, some are biased because they include people who chose to use remote therapy, making them more likely to benefit from it. Challenges for psychiatry. Remote therapy also presents challenges when psychiatrists, in particular, are treating patients with medications. Some state regulations require that patients be seen in person before being prescribed a controlled substance. Edward J. Bilotti, MD, board-certified psychiatrist and addiction specialist, points out that telemedicine has some critical limitations. Some types of medications used to treat serious mental illness can cause side effects that I would look for by checking a patient's muscle tone. This requires a hands-on physical examination, which cannot be done over video. My assessment is limited only to what I can see within the camera range. For example, I don't see if a patient has trouble walking or getting up from a chair. These kinds of things give information as to a person's overall health and well-being. Dr. Bilotti also says treating patients with addictions via remote therapy can be problematic. We are not able to collect samples for getting the whole picture. Before video chats were so common, when they were still the stuff of futuristic science fiction, the dream was that you would feel like you were right there, that the physical distance would disappear by the magic of technology. Instead, the videos are grainy, low resolution, and only show people from the shoulders up. As a result, you miss a vast amount of information passing between the people chatting. People communicate with one another with verbal as well as non-verbal signals. Verbal communication is the spoken word and its infinite nuances. The ums and ahs, the pauses and inflections, all help communicate our feelings and meanings. Our word choices, accents, and idioms all play a huge role in interacting with others. Nonverbal communication includes body movements, gestures, posture, touch, the surrounding environment, and personal space. These are all things that give information and communicate our message to others in ways we may not even be aware of. When you filter a conversation through a webcam portal, a good deal of this information gets lost. We have a certain chemistry. In-person interactions stimulate our brains more